This is for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast. With over 40 years of playing PlayStation and 5 plus years in the gamers media combined, we thought we'd throw our hat into the ring and join that PlayStation conversation.
If you would also like to join that PlayStation conversation, you can do so every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes, and other podcast services. More conversation happens on our Facebook community group at facebook.com/groups/thepopculturist. You can be a part of the conversation by submitting questions for us to answer at your pleasure at www.thepopculturist.com/questions. But the most conversation happens on our Discord channel. You can get a link for that at the aforementioned Facebook group or in the description below. And if you happen to really like what we do, please consider heading over to patreon.com/thepopculturist. Check out the tiers there. There might be something there that interests you.
I like how we sync up. It's fine.
I still think of Soldier Boy every time.
I'm not dancing again. When I was editing that, I'm like...
cringy?
It was very cringy. Very bad at dancing.
Yeah, we're white.
How's your week been?
Great.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking great.
Yeah.
A certain game came out this week.
We'll get to that.
That I wasn't going to pick up, and I ended up picking it up. But we'll get to that later. It's a week.
Yeah, we were having a discussion before we started recording just about how you just wake up, go get your coffee, come home, study, or play games, and repeat.
So it's one or the other.
And then occasionally work.
I study or play games. It's normally play games. I should study more, but I like games too. I like games.
So have you only been playing the one game this week so far?
Yeah. Oh, well, two. One new one.
Mm.
But obviously Gwent. Still jump in.
So with the new seasons kicking off, how are you going with it?
Yeah, not bad. I pretty much jump in every day, do my first daily,
yep.
Which is normal. Can be anywhere between 3 to 6 games, depending if you win or you lose. Lately, I've just been winning all three, get the daily done nice and quick. Takes 15 minutes, get a new keg, open some cards, and I'm out. But it's good. My win to loss ratio is very good. I think I'm at, like, for this season, I'm at like 25-4.
Fuck yeah.
That's pretty good. Pretty fun good.
So
I nearly got to the top of 1,000 already.
Hey!
I was like 1,150. So I think if I keep at it, I'll get in there.
So my buddy Paul at work, he asked me about you when you're Gwenting every day.
Does he?
Yeah, because he's super into it as well.
Oh, is he?
He's nice. He's nowhere near as consistent.
Yeah.
His win-loss ratio is very poor.
very Paul.
Yeah, very Paul. Yeah. So for him, he's like, how's Josh going? Is he winning? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Ask him. So he's done the same thing now what you've done. He's made the spreadsheet and he's breaking it down.
Yeah. What did I do wrong? And what didn't I expect?
He's limiting himself to 5 games a night.
Okay.
Because apparently that works, as in like knowing I only have 5 games, I've got to be in it to win it. So he's very meticulous about those 5 games now. Previously he would just play until he gets bored and goes back.
Yeah.
And he'd end up losing a ton of games. So he's like, I've got 5 games and I need to get my 5 wins.
Yeah. So you need to win. The way the daily system works is good, whereas Hearthstone, it's like, win 5 games as a mage. You could lose 15 fucking games in a row, and you're not even close to getting the daily done. But with Gwent, it's win X amount of rounds per day.
Mm.
So even if you lose the overall match, you'll still normally pick up a round. And if you really get that desperate, just go all in on round 1, and you're guaranteed to win it, because no one goes all in on round 1, you know what I mean? So even at a loss, you're still chipping away at getting your daily reward. So it's very generous in that respect. And of course, Destiny 2, but that we're going to be talking about that as the main topic for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll call it a review. I mean, I've finished it. I've done some in-game stuff.
Yeah, you've put like what?
I put in 12 hours yesterday.
Yeah, so probably like 20-ish hours, I reckon.
Yeah, 18, 19 hours, I think so, in 2 days. That's 2 weeks worth of studying on a video game.
Yeah,
oh. We'll get to that later. What about you?
I've been...
Before you go. I was on last night. I was ready to hop off, actually, off Destiny. I'm like, oh, it's got like 6 people online. I normally just, what's everyone playing right now? It's Destiny. And you, the odd one out. I got 6 friends on Destiny 2 doing this, Destiny 2 and that. Ryan Betson, everybody's golf. I'm like, what on earth are you doing? Can you explain that to me, please?
Okay.
Arguably the biggest game of the year, the biggest sequel of the year. of the generation.
Yeah.
And you're playing everybody's golf.
Yeah, everybody's golf's a ton of fun. I went back and spent a bit more time with it. So yesterday was very interesting. What happened is I had full intentions to come home, play Destiny 2. That was my plan. Mm-hmm. Came home, had dinner, fucking passed out on the couch. Mm-hmm. As in like mouth open, neck crank.
Yeah.
Like woke up like 2.5 hours later, dry mouth.
Where just, am I?
Like the groggy. I'm like, ugh. I'm like, okay.
Doesn't need.
So then I go in, I wander into the bedroom and Millie is there and she's watching TV and James is sprawled on my side of the bed. We almost had the exact same sleeping position.
Mm.
He's like, I'm like, man, I can't move him. Like, I can't go to bed. But I'm still groggy and shit. I'm like, all right, well, we'll go play games, I guess. Yeah. So I've chucked on Destiny 2 and I did, I don't know, about half hour, 45 minutes, probably not even. And I'm like, I can't concentrate. I'm just fucking super cloudy.
Mm.
So then I started hearing everybody's golf. I'm like, it was simple. It was clear. It was easy. It wasn't too complicated. I could still kick its butt and like not.
Fair enough. Okay.
Not lose my, like, not have to have such super concentration. And then this morning, I played it again. Mostly because I wanted
everybody's
to.
Everybody's golf.
Yep.
Oh, for fuck's
and because Millie was asleep. Because James had a horrible night. So my wife was still asleep. I took him out into the lounge room. I started playing Destiny for a little bit, but then he kept sooking and, you know, and like cracking. And I had him playing all these toys, but because, you know, with it being all online, you can't really pause it. So I was like, fuck it, I'll pull out of that, jump into everybody's golf so I could pause it and jump in and out and do what I needed, you know, and feed him and then come back. And
damn this. Kids interrupting gaming time.
It's fine. So like that's, like, you end up playing more everybody's golf again. I found Shuhei. That was cool.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, so cool. I was wandering around the home area and there's this little Asian dude who just walks up and I'm like,
that's Shuhei.
It's fucking Shuhei shit. And like it looks at him, he's like,
ah, oh, Shuhei waved for me. Like, oh, yeah.
There's a screenshot of me waving at in-game Shuhei.
Can't do that in Destiny 2.
So I've been playing a little bit of everybody's golf. Again, still a ton of fun. It's that same sort of zen sensation that I get from farming games. It's just kind of, you can zone out and just do it. That's good.
Yep.
What else have we been playing? We played Knack 2. We streamed Knack 2 the other day.
I forgot to mention that, actually.
So that was, we multiplayed that for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
Fucking no idea what that story's about.
No, but that's the thing, is it's hard to keep track of a story while you're streaming because you're interacting with the chat and everything like that. But it was good. Yeah, I think I said it at the end of the stream, it's not something I think anyone of our demographic would get much enjoyment out of. Maybe trophy hunters or something, but thinking from the mind of a, you know, 6 to 10 year old, or, you know, however old they're going to be, there's some really cool fucking set pieces in it. Like, there's a lot of very kind of Uncharted-y in terms of like the old overgrown tombs, and he's like swinging around, and there's some quick time events. I think, you know, for that age bracket, if you can get it into their hands, I think it'd be really, really enjoyable. And it's it is exactly what the target audience, you know,
yeah,
needs. It's made for that audience and it is perfect for that audience. I myself, you know, it's not for me, but it's not marketed to me. It's not aimed at me either. But no, it was enjoyable. When we found out that the main scientist, doctor guy, the blonde one, did the voice for Chris Parnell did like Roy Mustang from Full Metal Alchemist, I was like, invested.
Oh, I was thinking, was it Chris Parnell?
No, we decided it wasn't.
No, I thought it was Chris Parnell, but it actually wasn't. It was somebody else. Yeah, look, I'm in the same boat as you. I certainly agree. I do like this change towards sort of these sort of impressive set pieces. Because I distinctly don't remember that being a thing in the first one. Mind you, I already spent like probably 2 hours, 3 hours with the first one. I had more fun playing with you than I did playing the game.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the fun.
Travis Willingham,
that's the one. So like it certainly feels better than the first one. It plays better than the first one.
Interesting to see. But
once again, it's just, we reached out to PlayStation, having it being a PlayStation exclusive, we thought it'd be a cool thing to cover, and it certainly was, and it did way better than we thought it was going to do in terms of stream. Shit, yeah. So
it'd be interesting to see further into the game, because, you know, it seemed to kind of open up a little bit, not open up, but when we got into the mines and you get like the metal casing for your body, and then you get all new abilities,
like Iron Knack.
Like Iron Knack and stuff. I'd imagine there's plenty more of them throughout the game. Because the combat was starting to feel a little bit stale. Especially after had that massive slog through the
town. There was that really like that, the pacing on that sort of going through the town area was a little bit off.
But I kind of think
that it went a bit longer because we were playing multiplayer.
Yeah, probably. But getting, you know, new knacks, you know, every kind of chapter or whatever, I think will keep the combat nice and fresh for the youngins, because youngins do get bored very quickly.
Oh yeah.
But it's a good game.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably doesn't deserve the memeing that it gets.
I don't get where it started.
But no, it's a good game, and if anything, hopefully the memeing helps its sales, because
I honestly I think it really would have that, and the fact that it was somehow free for about 4 hours.
Not anymore. Sorry.
I don't know. So essentially, what happened for some reason on the PSN here in Australia, Knack 2 was free for a couple of hours.
Intern got fired. That's what happened.
Yeah. So that's very, very interesting. Yeah. So essentially, apparently, if you had downloaded it, like if you claimed it and downloaded it, nothing, no problems. Mm. But if you claimed it but didn't download it, then it wouldn't let you do it.
Okay. Right. Well, maybe that's all part of their marketing thing.
Smart.
Because then people are like, oh, I could have had it for free. Oh, and then they're like, oh, I did kind of want to play it. Oh, fuck, I'll go buy it then.
Maybe.
Is that what you've been playing?
No, I've been playing. I've had a pretty busy week. On Monday, I played Ark Survival Evolved.
Oh, yeah.
We played about an hour or so at last recording for the players. Since then, played good 2-3, couple more hours with it. That game is dense.
Yeah.
But...
That's so what those games are,
rewarding,
though.
So like I was really lucky. So the people that I was playing with, because like it is unabashedly a PC port,
yeah,
without a doubt. Like no questions asked, they have gone, here it is on your console. Mm. So it has all the sort of weird server selection shit that you're used to on PC. The menus are incredibly cumbersome, and would benefit from a cursor. Like I think, you know, in Destiny how you have the little cursor thing. Like the game would benefit from that. It would make something as simple as putting a shirt on you easier, rather than going what would be 1-2 on a computer is like 8 clicks on the console, and it's fucked. It's that part is super fucked. Mm-hmm. But once you sort of get around it, understand it, and you sort of get used to it, the game becomes a bit more fluid, a bit more interesting.
I imagine it would get to the point with the menus where you'll be able to do it without thinking, like just muscle memory. Okay. To put this in there, it's 8 buttons, so you just kind of not even.
But even something as simple as like selecting, because this happens in most, you know, RPGs, right? Or most sort of menu systems in console. So you got the shirt, you click the shirt, and it'll automatically highlight the shirt. And if you press X again, it drops it in there. With here, it goes, picks it up, and then you've got to go, oh, hang on.
Yeah.
But once you sort of get over that little hurdle, the game opens up, and it becomes interesting, completely different experience.
Yeah.
So then you start sort of breaking down the survival aspects of it. So I think as we mentioned last week, so you wake up on like a beach with fucking nothing. You're butt naked. Like you got undies on. That's it. Unnecessary buff dude with undies with a weird rock diamond thing in your arm. Then you have to survive. So just like Minecraft, you start punching trees. Get that wood. Then you build an axe. Then you sort of upgrade and upgrade and upgrade. Yeah. So you've got that usual survivalness of like, you know, getting food, getting water. Like there's a lot of sort of stat management, which is fun, also frustrating, because if you're fucking around the middle of a forest like I was, and it's like, you're really thirsty now, I'm like, oh God, oh God, and some rain.
That's just you being poor at the game.
Yeah, totally true.
Unprepared.
But like, then you're like, okay, cool, and then I'll make a little drink sack. So even you have a drink sack, and then you sort of travel a little bit further into the island, and dinosaurs fuck you up. Like I impressively survived 2 Dilophosauruses, you know, the Jurassic Park, the frill that motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. So they spit shit at you like in the movie, slow you down, and then just chomp at you.
Yeah.
Somehow I've got a spear, and I'm like, nah. Survived 2 of them.
Nice.
And then I was sitting there at a night, I think it was a camp. So I just set up camp, like pitch black. I'm like, I just set up a camp, a little fire, fucking raptor.
Oh, nice. Escape?
Killed it. I'm like, what the fuck?
Nice.
So, fire the raptor. Now, side note, to their credit, the dinosaurs in this game look actually a bit more what kind of dinosaurs are sort of alleged to like. There's a lot more feathers on them and stuff. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yep. And then I was wandering over this valley and I saw this zebra looking thing. And I was like, oh, cool, a zebra looking thing. I'm going to say hey to the zebra. I'm like, the 20 second delay on the chat. They're like, don't, it's really aggressive. By then, I've already been beaten the shit out of.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, oh man.
That's all part of the learning experience with these survival games. What can I go near? What like, can't hey, what's I go that near? Thing? How Dead. Powerful is that? I don't know. Let's go find out. Really powerful. I'll come back to
I
that.
I also found this like big sort of shrine thing, which is used to be able to transfer your character between servers. It's in this big sort of like crater and there's a water and there was a big fucking long necked dinosaur in there as well. I'm like, wonder how am I going to get there? And like a big drop into the water and the chat's like, jump. I'm like, all right, whatever. And land in the water, and everyone's like, holy fuck.
Oh, you did it.
I didn't know you were going to do that. It was like, the game is fun. The people that were supported, like, playing with me, some of them, like,
the like guy. Like, friends or just random?
Random people. Okay. Like, in the same way that Splatoon did, right? Where there was just these people that just came in and just helped me and made it better, right? Same goes for here. They're like, hey, go up that hill, head over there. There should be a little shack. In that shack, there's this. You know, they sort of directed me in places and sort of telling me what I needed to craft.
How are you chatting on the PS4 though?
I was just using the stream chat.
Oh, the stream chat. I thought you meant like
in-game. No. This is all during the stream. So they're all giving me all this information. And because I was playing a solo server, they couldn't come in. No one could come in and fuck me around. Okay. You know, they were sort of like, hey, you know, build the shack here, put over here, you know, like, and then... Same thing. Wandering, I'm like, hey, what's in the ocean? Go in the ocean. Fucking megalodon, big fuck off shark. I'm like, nah! It spots me and starts going, and I'm like,
that's the thing when you're underwater in games. You see an enemy, it's like, does it know I'm here? And you kind of keep going, and then you see the motion, and it's just panic. Just that's the thing because I'm playing obviously The Witcher 3 as well, just a little bit in the water. All you can do under the water to attack is use your crossbow. I don't know how that physics works, but the enemies aren't in the water. They're like harpies above the water, and they swoop into the water and like go at you and then like fly back out. Fucking scary as shit. I'm in the middle of this lake and they've got like eight harpies like I've got the crossbow and I'm like miss, oh fuck, drown, and they're like pecking at my
But yeah, Ark is it surprisingly more fun than I thought it was going to be. And
you can imagine how much fun it will be with three or four friends.
Yeah, I'm looking at jumping onto the PC with it. Just because I know I have, you know, part of our community have it on PC. Mm-hmm. So it'd be nice to sort of jump in with them. Because we're trying to work out how, you know, because we're playing it on the Xbox. So I was trying to see how we could get it to talk to the servers on the PC. Didn't want to work. I know apparently it's there. But I don't know how it works, so I'm just going to probably play on a PC. Fair enough. Cool. And what else do I play? I think that's probably it, really.
It has to be it, surely.
Yeah, and then Destiny, of course.
Albeit briefly.
Yep. But we'll get to that in just a moment.
The timing of my laptop turning off was very poor.
I'm quite proud of this one. I've actually played a lot more games this week than normal, which is nice.
There we go. I normally toggle between 1 to 3.
And I went back to play some more Rabbids as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. But that's a Nintendo game and we don't talk about that here.
No, we don't. Don't have time for that.
We're just procrastinating to my laptop.
But anyways, this is the part of the show that we inform the players about the latest PlayStation and gaming news from the week. Normally, his computer doesn't turn itself off. It turns itself off all the time.
Well, it does.
So we're just waiting for it to kick back in so we can read the news.
3, 2, 1. Number one. Last week, Warner Brothers and Monolith announced that they would sell a piece of charity DLC in commemoration of the tragic death of developer Michael Forgey. All seemed well until some noticed that the small print that the DLC's trailer seemed to not only exclude donations on purchases in certain US states, but also purchases worldwide. IGN reached out to get clarification on exactly how the money from the upcoming charity DLC would be distributed. In a statement, Warner Brothers said, quote, neither Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment nor Monolith Productions will profit from any sales of the Fourth Hog Orcslayer DLC, regardless of the territory in which that DLC is sold. While still unclear where payments will be made to, it seems certain that the developer and producer won't be gaining undue profit from buyers who may not be aware where their money is going. So last week we talked about this DLC. Praise it. Very cool idea.
I have a question. It's $5, and they say
getting to that.
I want to know where the other $1.50 or $3.50 goes.
Yeah, so in the release, it's like $3.50 of each $5 purchase will go to the family of Michael Forgy. Awesome, and I imagine at the time they'd keep $1.50, which to me it's like, yeah, okay, you know, you got to make it, you got to, you know, pay everyone for it. But the internet went fucking insane, as the internet does, as you know. You know, making cash off someone's death, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So while they have clarified they're not profiting, it's still unclear where the money or how the money is actually being distributed.
Like, I'm sure maybe there's some, like, storefront stuff with, you know, putting it on PSN or Xbox, you know, whatever.
Yeah, Warner Bros. Like, we're not profiting. Monolith isn't profiting. PlayStation's profiting.
Yeah, maybe there is just some sort of back-end cost that comes with having it. Mind you, I certainly don't condone that shit. I think they should fucking front that cost. You know, really.
Yeah. But at least Warner Brothers came out and said something.
Yeah.
Because so too many times we see companies under all this, you know, internet scrutiny just be silent. And that makes it so much worse.
Yeah, but this is such a personal thing that it would be stupid of them not to.
Very matter of fact what Warner Brothers said too. Mm. No ifs, ands or buts. It's just as in... That's it. Shut the fuck up about it. Mm. We're trying to do a nice thing. So lay off. I think it's a great incentive. I think it's a, I think I said it's the first of its kind in that respect. Yeah.
In terms of paid DLC, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, I think they've done a nice thing. So maybe just, you know, settle down a little bit. That's
in the bandwagoning.
Yeah. Number two, Resident Evil 7's long-awaited DLC will be released for PS4, Xbox One, and PC on December 12th, Capcom announced, in conjunction with the game's Gold Edition. Capcom also confirmed the delayed Not a Hero DLC, which has players assume the role of BSAA soldier Chris Redfield.
Spoilers, by the way. He's in the game.
Oh, I thought you meant what I just said was spoiler. What?
It is. Chris Redfield's like one of the last things you see in the game.
It's been out for like 7 months.
Yeah, but still
will be available to download for free on December 12th as well, regardless of which copy of Resident Evil 7 players own. The special edition of the horror title will come packaged with the full base game and all of the add-on content, which includes both banned footage DLC add-ons and the new End of Zoe campaign. Pricing is yet to be revealed. The End of Zoe campaign sounds cool. It's like, what happened to Zoe after? Like, after the events?
Mm.
That sounds really rad. I do want to get back to it, but I don't at the same time.
It's something like
it's a weird time of year where it's like I'm never gonna play this. Mm.
But we did promise the Patreons that we would stream it, so maybe is that where we can get around it?
Yeah, maybe. How far did you get through it?
I'm like 80% of the way through it.
And you didn't finish it.
No,
you're so
close. No, because I gave it because your dad wanted to play it, so I gave it to your dad.
Yeah, when you were done with it.
No, I was like, because I think something else came out. I'm like, I want to finish this, but your dad will enjoy it. Here you go. So it's been months. Can I have it back so I can play? I'll finish it.
He's ready to give it back. You just had to ask.
I would like to finish it. So that could be two. It's either two or three games to finish this year. Shut up.
Two. But, you know, the gold. It seems really soon for a gold edition, but I guess if all the DLC is out, then there's probably no reason not to. In terms of pricing, I imagine it's be at the full price of a regular game.
$60 US?
Yeah, $60 US. Yeah, be $100 down here probably.
Yeah, likely.
This one I put in just for you. There's not a lot of news on it, but I thought it might tickle your weenus anyway.
Mm.
Number three, Finn Bryce. Tickling Ryan's weenus. He's not. CEO of Chucklefish, who are the publishers of Stardew Valley, has posted a tweet that teases the company's next homegrown title. Not much is known of the title as of yet, although Bryce has alluded to an upcoming project in the past, which he characterised as being, quote, Stardew Valley meets Harry Potter. It's important to note that by Harry Potter, he's referring to the idea of witches and wizards attending a magical school rather than actual any former crossover, just to put that to rest. So I thought that might just tickle your fancy.
Fuck.
Big fan of, yes, you're a big fan of Stardew Valley. So
love,
I imagine
Stardew Valley.
By affiliation, you're a big fan of Chucklefish.
Yep.
And I know you'll be keen for anything else. The tweet he put out, the screenshot, really kind of got my imagination going. It's just a simple screenshot, but Stardew Valley is very kind of the pixelated kind of thing. This is not. That's very clean, very crisp, and I do like witches and wizards too.
Yeah, so what people have been asking for years and years and years. Like, we want a Harry Potter RPG where you get to play as a kid in the school.
Yeah.
And
not one of the big names.
No, like, I don't want to be Harry, I don't want to be Ron. I want to
choose my house at the start of the game.
I want to be, assigned to my house, whatever, and then just do it.
You know, you know, they're high as fuck all the time.
But,
you know, maybe, you know, obviously, but the appeal of the Harry Potter is obviously the world and, yeah, you know, everything like that. But
I think, like, fuck, this will, yes, be great.
Stardew Valley has quickly become a very big name in the industry, very well acclaimed game, and you know it is coming to Switch, and they are bringing in multiplayer at some point next year.
Bring to the Switch.
So it's cool to see that they are continuing and working new things as well.
And speaking of big names in the industry,
us?
No.
Oh, you're segueing.
Segueing.
Number four, Rockstar Games has announced that LA Noire will be coming to the Nintendo Switch, PS4, and Xbox
One.
Fun
to say weird.
As well as via a VR experience that pulls from the original game. The updated version of the 2011 game will be released November 14th across all announced systems. The Switch version features the full original game, all of its DLC, and Switch-specific adjustments like optional Joy-Con gyroscopic and motion controls.
Yep, turn that off.
As well as HD rumble. And wide and over-the-shoulder camera angles. Okay, I guess that makes sense. For those playing in handheld mode, new contextual touchscreen controls have also been added for this edition. The release will make LA Noire the first Rockstar Games title to appear on the Switch. LA Noire on the PS4 and Xbox One, meanwhile, will also feature the full base game and all of its DLC, as well as, quote, a range of technical enhancements for greater visual fidelity and authenticity, including enhanced lighting and clouds, new cinematic camera angles, high-resolution textures, and more. Did you ever play this?
No, but it's one of those games that, like, every time I think about it, I'm like, fuck, I wish I played that.
Every time I go to, like, EB Games, I see it, pre-owned for, like, $8, and it's like, oh, maybe I should.
Because, like, it was sort of semi-revolutionary at the time, as in what they were trying to do was focus on facial capture.
Yeah.
So when you would investigate someone, or you would interrogate them, you would have to notice the small inflections in their face. Granted, it wasn't all that nuanced. There was moments where I was like, I didn't do it. Like, you did it. it wasn't quite as, you know,
yeah, subtle. But the idea was there.
And, you know, the I remember getting pretty good rating, pretty good reviews. I'm certainly consider picking it up.
So
the VR option is interesting, because that'll be the full on interrogation. Like, you'll be looking directly at them. Well, not that part.
Oh man.
Yeah, and Switch, awesome. This is the first Rockstar game to come to.
That's the biggest news out of this, I think, is that Rockstar are like, yeah, testing. We'll do shit on the Switch for sure. Like, we'll start with this, and then maybe there'll be more. And
yeah, you're not gonna get GTA or anything. Don't fucking get your hopes up. Like,
GTA 5 on the Switch seems like the biggest anti Nintendo, like, normal Nintendo thing ever.
Don't get me wrong. GTA has been on Nintendo platforms before. They had Chinatown Wars on the DS way back in the day.
Yeah.
Which was more of a top down sort of original-ish GTA sort of game. Good game, great game actually. But this is good. Test that waters. Maybe they can bring some other things. Maybe they can bring Bully. Maybe they can bring, you know, like...
Well, it's good for them to do something on the Switch that they can see, what can we do with the system power that it has? You know, how far can we push it? How does that open up doors for our other games, future games?
So, like, LA Noire being a PS3, Xbox 360 game, it's pretty demanding. So that'd be interesting to see if the Switch can run it well.
And especially with all the, you know, they are going to improve the graphics and the lighting and all of that too. I'd imagine they'd do some tweaking for the Switch as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Switch is powerful enough to do it with a little bit more oomph to it as well.
I'm keen as shit.
You going to get it?
Potentially.
November 14th.
And they're not finishing it.
That's not too far off.
That's just, yeah. That's right around the time of Horizon, though.
True. Mm. I forgot about that. Fuck.
So you're playing it, not me, so you're all good.
Yeah, well. Number five, an Xbox store listing. I know I said Xbox, I'm sorry. Has all but confirmed a previous leak regarding Destiny 2's Curse of Osiris DLC. The listing, which does not specify a release date, includes the following list of additions to the base game. Explore Mercury and its mysterious infinite forest, new story missions and adventures, new themed weapons, armor and gear to earn, new cooperative activities, new competitive multiplayer areas. Description also confirms you'll learn more about the mysterious Osiris, who we've previously heard about but never met. In a quote from the store page, Destiny 2's Expansion 1, Curse of Osiris, I took a breath in a really weird spot there, continues your Guardian's journey with all new story missions and adventures set in a new destination, Mercury. It's really close to the sun. Mm. How do you deal with that? Crazy. Journey through time and space.
Gatam.
To learn the secrets of Osiris, avert a dark future, and rebuild the ties between the legendary warlock and his greatest student, Ikora Rey. All of this correlates with a previous source. The only major detail missing here is a mention of the first game's lighthouse location becoming a new social hub. Given how much was correct from the original leak, we'd expect that to be true as well. Cool.
What's this do for you?
I mean, it's what you'd expect from expansion, yeah? His new area, his small weapons, his small guns.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no surprise. I just... seems super early to have it leaked.
Yeah, because as we discussed before, Activision have a deal with Bungie that they have to release X amount of DLC in X amount of time frame. Like, it was part of that $10 million deal for Destiny 2.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense why they're already working on it.
It's already, like, probably nearly finished at this point. Mm. I mean, Destiny 2 would have been ready to ship a few months ago at this point. But yeah, I know. I thought it would just be interesting to say.
Well, I'm keen to hear more things about from Destiny 2 from you. But before we do that, there's one final thing we have to talk about.
Top-selling games for the week ending September 3rd, 2017. What the fuck? Starting number 10, Rugby League Live 4. Number 9, Ghost Recon Wildlands. Number 8, Uncharted 4. Number 7, GTA 5. Number 6, Yakuza 6. Number 5, F1 2017. Number 4, Madden 2018. Number 3, Ark Survival Evolved. Number 2, Crash Insane Trilogy. And number 1, Uncharted The Lost Legacy.
It's no surprises there, once again. Apart from Ark. Ark's doing well. That's fantastic for a game, you know, PC game.
Three sports games in the top 10.
Fuck yeah.
I forget.
The sport games are really popular.
I forget that they're a thing and how popular
they
are.
Can we do a topic about sports games?
Yeah.
Because I think it'd be great to talk about it. Because like, I don't really get them, but I get baseball mostly.
They're the kind of games that if I'm in a friend's place and he boots it up and we play, it's fun as anything.
Yeah.
But I've never bought one myself, ever. But it's no surprise the Uncharted's still up there. I'm surprised, actually, that Ark wasn't at least at number 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of strange, I think.
Yeah, there's a big hype train behind it, so it's good.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe
Wildlands is still in there. No Call of Duty still.
Yeah. Ark seems to be the kind of game that will hang around in there for a very long time at various points.
I think it'll bounce around,
you know, going around. Because it is the kind of game that you don't just kind of... you buy it at release or don't buy it at all. It is one, you know, word of mouth and friends showing friends and friends talking about it. And people.
And once you sort of get the hold of it, and like it's continuously updated as well.
Yeah.
So I think...
definitely the kind of game that'll be in there. Predictions for next week. Number 1.
Destiny 2.
And Knack 2 at number 5.
Ooh.
I want Knack to see some love
okay.
in there.
Nice, I'd
really like Knack to see some love in there. That's it for the news.
So we head into the main topic of the show, which doesn't have a name yet. It's been like
it's never gonna have
almost
one.
20 weeks. The main topic of this episode is all on Josh. So Josh, bring it in.
I think I've played enough Destiny to do a review. I'm not gonna score it. I don't think it's worth scoring in that respect.
Yeah,
it's just kind of worth noting what's good and what might not be so good about it. I will keep it as spoiler free as I possibly can.
We'll give us a quick brief of the story for those that may not be playing it, which is like 8 of you.
The story is essentially a new branch of the Cabal has found its way to the Traveler and fucked it right up. They found a way to stop the Traveler from emitting any light, which therefore strips all the Guardians of their powers, and they sack the city so hard. They destroy, I forget what it's called, the tower and the surrounding city. They fucking destroy it to no end. So you as a Guardian, it's up to, you know, you survive just with your life, and you get out and you need to find your light back, and you need to find a way to take the city back from the Cabal with a few... spanners in the works for the story. It's not so clear cut and as simple as it might be, as just getting your power back and killing the dude. There's a few other things in there that don't make it quite so simple. What I want to praise Bungie on more than fucking anything throughout the whole campaign is giving the villain screen time, giving you some backstory, making you care, almost making him a sympathetic figure as well. They did such a great job of building Gaul up as a villain throughout the whole game, instead of it just being, because Destiny 1 suffered from a big lack of story. Yeah? That was the big...
insane.
Until, I think, The Taken King. Yeah. Where they really... and that it seems they've learned a lot from Destiny 1 and where they fell short with that. But every few story missions, you'll get a cutscene with Gaul. You know, kind of what he's doing at the time and what he's thinking, and he's, you know, talking to people and stuff. And yeah, they did such a great job of making him an interesting villain, giving him just enough time on the screen that it's like, oh, I get his motivations and I can see why he wants to do it, and it's a little bit sad in this respect, you know, some of his backstory and all that, but not enough that you're like, I've had enough of seeing him on the screen, I just want him to die. They hit just the right note. Such an awesome, interesting villain. Kind of fell apart towards the end a little bit in terms of the story. I think what they did for the build-up, the payoff was really kind of weird, I think, at the end of it. But overall, the story was fantastic. But we know that Destiny isn't just about doing the story, though. That's like the story is there just to get you to max level, yeah? And then it's all about the end game stuff. The biggest complaint people have about it so far is that the shaders are now limited use, not unlimited as they were in Destiny 1. And you can buy them.
Yeah, behind a paywall, yeah.
Behind a... Well, the, see... I think it's blown way out of proportion. I mean, I get it. It is a big change from Destiny 1. They were free, unlimited use in Destiny 1, and now you can buy them in Destiny 2, and they're limited use. I get the argument. Well, why was it
it's
free?
It's the literal polar opposite, yeah.
Well, like, but the game is super fucking generous with them as well. Like, I'm at max level. I've finished the story, and I've got probably 30 shaders in my inventory, each with a stack of 5, so you can recolor your whole armor. And every time when you hit max level, you still keep your level bar. And every time it goes up, you get an engram, which you can encrypt into more shaders as well. So I've found the game to be very fucking generous with the shaders.
Okay.
It does suck that they've done it the way they have. And I understand the backlash. And it is a bit shitty of a business practice. But I've got more than I'll probably use for the rest of the year at this point. I've only been playing for 2 days. I mean, it's not like they've held them back from you at that same time. In terms of the gameplay, though, like you said when we did the beta impressions, it's Destiny. You can't get much tighter in the gameplay-wise as Destiny 1 was. I did find I needed to jack my sensitivity right up, though.
Me too.
Our buddy Max did as well. He needed to jack up the sensitivity.
Yeah, first thing
as well.
I did was I was playing like, this is fucking... And I jumped sensitivity straight up, and it was all good.
It was defaulted at like 4. I put it to like 8 or something. Yeah, I think that was just right. But it plays super smooth, and it's Destiny. You've got your subclasses, you've got your abilities. See, because I didn't play Destiny 1 enough, I don't know which classes are new and what abilities were there previously and all that kind of stuff. But I'm playing the Titan, and I've unlocked all 3 classes and mucked around with all of them. And they're all super fun. They're all super interesting in their own way. And I'm seeing, like, watching, because I was playing with our buddy Max yesterday, watching him as a hunter do his things, and he's, like, zipping about and doing all this stuff. I'm like, this is cool. I don't feel like I'm just running and gunning next to another dude running and gunning. I'm doing my thing with my abilities, and you can see him zipping about and doing all this shit with his abilities. It makes you feel like an individual, if you know what I mean.
Part of a team.
But also part of a team,
everyone has their sort of role.
Yeah, yeah. But in terms of scenery and the world, it's fucking awesome.
You should see it on the pro.
Some of these planets, like all of the planets are obviously very distinct in how they look. But in just Destiny 1 was a very barren kind of place. Yeah, there wasn't, you know, you went to Earth and it was like almost may as well just been a flat field with some buildings around it and stuff. This is so completely different. It's a lot greener for starters. It's not so washed with your grays and your browns and your blacks and your whites. Very green, very pretty. I've taken so many screenshots to the point where I wish there was an option to hide your HUD. Not even a photo mode, just to hide the HUD, get your gun out of it and get all your menus and shit out of it, just to take fucking amazing screenshots. It looks so good, and there's so much to do in the world. The public events, they were in Destiny 1, but they seem to be really infrequent and really kind of hammed in there. Every now and then a fallen ship will come in, like, a public event, go kill them and, yeah, be cool. But this, every public event, you have a way during the event to make it a heroic event. It makes it a little bit harder and you've got a chance to get better gear from it. So,
same as Destiny 1.
Is it? I'm not sure. Yeah. But every public event is different and how you trigger it into heroic is very different as well. Okay. You know, for this public event, you need to make sure, you know, there might be a ship flying around shooting you. It doesn't go heroic unless you kill that ship before the time is up and then do your stuff. Very interesting. The patrols are back again, but there's also options to replay old missions for current level gear. I'll go back and play an old story mission but get level 20 rewards from it, and it's quite a fair bit harder and everything as well. The strikes are cool. I mean, the design for all the strikes is very very new, very up and down and left and right and through tunnels, instead of it just being like a very... They are all linear in the way Destiny is, but a lot of variation in what you're seeing and where you're going and up and down, and the bosses are all really cool. The end game, I've only been playing for 2 days, but there's a lot to fucking do. Even when you hit 20, that's kind of not it, because then that unlocks, you need to do this to make to unlock that, and then you got to do this to unlock that, and then you got these to do. There is a fucking lot to do. Bungie have learned a lot from Destiny 1. This feels like what they wanted Destiny 1 to be, mm-hmm. but they just didn't know how to do it. But this feels more like Destiny than Destiny ever did. And in the first hour of the game, I felt more like emotional tings than I did for all of Destiny 1. The follow-up mission, the beta mission, where Gaul like takes your light and kicks you off and then you're kind of left to your own devices. The follow-up mission to that is one of the best missions I've done in a game in a long time. Just the way the music is crescendoing through the whole thing, and even though you're fading in and fading out, it keeps that same track going, which makes you feel like you are lost and you are alone and you've got nothing. They've done such a fucking good job of this game. Well, do you have any questions? I mean, you haven't played anywhere near as much.
No, I've played like 2 hours at best, and yeah. pretty much everything you're saying from my time with it is very much the same. So instantly, straight off the bat, it's like, I know I'm not the first person to say this either. In the first hour and a half, I feel from my time with Destiny 1 that there is already more of a story here. Mm-hmm. They've really structured... I think they... learned from Destiny 1 had the MMO-ness to it,
yeah.
Which did have some of the vague mission structure. What they've done here is they've sort of made it a little bit more precise, bring in cutscenes, bring in character development,
yeah.
And I think that has helped. So when you do go past that beta moment and, you know, you as a character, you're struggling and, you know, it's fucking awesome. Now, mind you, I know that the game doesn't permadeath you, but when you don't have the light, it's like the ghost is like, I can't resurrect you.
Yeah, the ghost says, because the ghost loses his light as well, obviously. He's like, I can heal you, but I can't resurrect you. Now, as a player in the game, that means fucking nothing. You die, you resurrect at a checkpoint, and you're here. But the emotional weight,
it's no instantaneous.
It,
yeah, like, yeah.
And, you know, you are just a dude with a gun. You don't have your grenades, you don't have your super, you can't double jump, and... When you're going through the next area without any of that, it's like, fuck, I rely on this so much.
I was playing, as I said, I played a little bit last night with headphones on, to sort of like atmosphere. So when I'm in that, after you get kicked off the thing, you're in the sort of open area, you start trudging through a cave to go and find your light again.
Just to get away.
It was tense.
Yeah.
I'm in that cave and I'm like, I didn't expect to get sort of a, I can't think of the right word, like visceral's not the right word, like surreal is not the quite right word, but it's just this higher level emotional response to the game than I thought I would. Yeah. I was actively like checking around corners and sort of like, I'm just like, but I'm like.
And don't get me wrong, at the end of the story, when you go back, you're just like, pew, 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 like flying around and throwing like fire hammers and shit at things, but. The build up to it is
The build up was lovely. You know, so from the writing that I've seen so far, although really good, there are some solid cliches in there.
I think one of them was just a nod to Destiny 1, I think. I don't know how far you are, but there is a line the ghost says. I'm like, he said it, but it's so fucking lame.
Oh, yeah, no. So it's, when you get your life back.
Yeah, he's like, eyes up, Guardian.
No, that was fantastic.
I was like, he said it, but
Yeah, because I think that was good. I think that was like, all right, we're back to what we were. I thought, not having played, 100 hours of whatever of Destiny 1, I still went, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
It was more of the when the bad guy is like there with his 2IC, the 2IC is like, no, we do it for you, brother. You know, it's just kind of like Bane shit.
Yeah, but that's how the Cabal are.
Yeah, but just some of the wording
he's
like, yeah. this is as much as your victory as it is mine. You know,
on that, with those two, Gaul and I forget the
John.
Other name. Yeah, Gaul and John, their dialogue throughout the game actually becomes very good, and you start to see. Because you spend time with Gaul, you see stuff happening, you start to see some cracks in it and all. I think my favourite part of the story is actually Gaul himself and his story and his motivations and all that. I can't praise it enough. They did such a great job with it.
So another little... It's a little thing that adds so much more character and just depth to the story. So when you go and collect a mission, rather than a person just going, and then there's that little menu stuff to the right, they talk to you, they like, they move and they have like lip sync, and like it adds more rather than just like you're talking to the MMO standard stilted character that you get your shit from.
Even as, because every planet you go to has its, in the same way Destiny 1 had its quartermasters and its tokens and everything, every planet has like an ambassador on the planet. They're the ones you go to hand in that planet's resource to get rewards. And they're normally the main quest giver on the planet as well. They all have their own kind of quest line to get you to get to know that ambassador and all that. But even if you're just kind of walking past them, you know, they'll say a comment to you as you go past. Even if you're just standing there doing something and another guardian is talking to them, you hear them interacting with that guardian as well. They've given all the characters some kind of life instead of them just being the static, like you said, just a static normal MMO NPC that just stands there all day until you walk up.
Yeah. To me, that's added more to the world. Intriguing me. It's making me want to deal with these people more.
Well, on the world, there was a mission on one of the planets. I can't say too much about it, but with the Hive, and the Hive has always tickled me the wrong way, in the way that I'm scared of the Hive. Like, the Hive levels I fucking hate, because they, I don't know why, you know the thralls, how they like run at you and they all, and there's like 40 of them sprinting at you. And I'm down in this Hive cave, and it's really kind of dark and really low cut, and you're crouching through and you're hearing the Hive in the walls and all that. I never felt so fucking alone in a video game in my life. Like, it was so intense. And just the atmosphere of the game is when you are in a fire team and you're doing your thing with your friends, and it's like pew 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 pew, and you know, it's like, we're fucking doing it, go team. But then when you are alone doing some of the story missions by yourself in these really remote locations, they did a great job of making you feel like I'm the only one here, and I'm the only one that can kind of stop this, and really gets the tension going. But on the Hive and the enemies, you know, pretty much all the same enemies are back. They all look a little bit better. They've upgraded. The Vandals, you remember the Fallen who shoot like that pew, 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 like the three little blue lasers? Got this thing now where they get on all fours and they like dog sprint like around corners, and they're so fucking fast. And it's fucking scary, because I hadn't seen one do it before, and I'm shooting this one and all of a sudden it's on all fours just like bolting at me. I'm like, so yes, but that's my one complaint, was that at this point, we have no new enemies, no new faction enemies. You know, the Hive have their knights and their wizards and their thralls, and you got the Cabal, you got the Legionnaires and the Phalanx guys. All the same enemies we had in Destiny 1. Now, I imagine we're going to get a new faction at some point, but I would have liked to see a new enemy introduced in the game itself, because even Gaul, you know, he's just a branch of the Cabal. It's not really a new faction to fight against. But I imagine that's coming. You know, I imagine that they're saving that for some point. But I'm really enjoying my time with it. It doesn't feel grindy, and that's the big thing. When you play an MMO and you get to maximum level, and it's like, okay, here comes a grind. You know, got to be raid ready, got to make sure I'm this and that and that. And while you are technically grinding, you know, you're doing your strikes again, you're doing your heroic events, your public events, and you're doing your patrols and all that, it doesn't feel grindy, because none of them are the same. Every single one has dialogue with any of the characters, and they've added a new thing, because your skill points, how do I word this, you level up, you get skill points to put into your character tree, but you don't get 10 points in one tree and then have 10 points to spend in your other tree. It's all shared. So if I spend 10 points in this tree and then I switch over to the other subclass, I've got no points because I've spent them all on the other one. So I've added these new quests called Adventures, which are like...
I did one of them this morning.
They're like mini missions on a level, and the reward is normally another skill point. So that's how you get your ability points back. But all the Adventures, they're a little bit... they're in between doing a patrol and a story mission. They're not so mindless as a patrol where it's like, you know, go survey this area because we need to fucking whatever. Not as in-depth as a story, but each adventure has its own story, and it does build the world a little bit more, and it does let you know a little bit more about the characters you're doing it for. They've done very good in that respect, is that, you know, the adventure missions, while they're not integral to the story, they do add a lot to it, and they do the world building very, very well. So I'm not even close to being bored. I mean, at the moment there's only 6 strikes, unfortunately, and you don't get to choose which strike you're doing. Now, I think that the reasoning for that is the pro players, you know, the really grindy people will find this is the best strike to do because it's the quickest, it's the most efficient, it's the only strike we're going to do forever. And, you know, that sucks. They've built all these other ones. So instead you just go, I want to play a strike, and it just finds you three other people and go, here you go, and you're doing this one. So in a way it sucks because our buddy Max has played four of the six and he just can't seem to get queued into the other two he hasn't done yet. It makes matchmaking quicker because you're just getting paired with anyone to do any strike instead of being like, no, I only want to do this one. So I need to find other people that only want to do this one with me.
Yeah.
So matchmaking for a strike maybe takes 45 seconds, if that.
Speaking of time, I'm finding potentially because of the pro, load times are drastically reduced.
They're much better, but on a OG PS4, they're still pretty shit.
It's fantastic on the PS4 Pro. But talking like what would have felt like a minute is feeling like 20 seconds.
Thankfully, what they've added in, when you're on a planet, you can fast travel around that planet without needing to go back to orbit and fly back down. And fast traveling between points takes maybe 5 seconds. Mm. So if you're on a planet, you're not going to see a loading screen for a very long time if you're planning on sticking around there for a while. Whereas, you know, in Destiny 1, you'd have to go back to orbit, load, choose where you want to be, load. But they still have that loading screen.
Yeah, but
the best thing is that when it's on that ship now, like when you're loading, you can still be in your menus and doing things. Whereas in Destiny 1, it would kick you out of your menus and you can't fucking do anything.
It's like, I'm finding, because it would go... So now, if what would feel like you're there for it, it would feel like minutes, but you know, it's probably like 40 seconds. Where this, it kind of comes in and goes, yep.
And we're in. It is still slow on the OG PS4, not as bad as Destiny 1. But like I said, you know, I've been planning my time. It's like, I'm going to spend the next hour on this planet, and I don't see another loading screen because I just fast travel between the main points on the planet I need to be. So I think they've done what they can to alleviate it. They must know that the loading times aren't fantastic, except for maybe pro users, obviously. So they've actively done what they can to alleviate load times where they can. So that's very good of them.
But speaking of the pro, it is running like a checkerboard at 4K.
Yep.
It looks fucking fantastic. It's sharp. It's like HDR is fantastic. Mm. Like, just if you want to talk about atmosphere, when you get some actual natural looking light, it completely changes a cave. Because like what's dark is darker because there's a brightness over here that kind of, and it's like that contrast that your eyes would really pick up in life.
Yep.
So it's kind of that. Makes every cave that bit more insane because it's genuinely dark. It looks so fucking crisp. Like, I'm like, the problem with Destiny, because Destiny was also playable on like PS3.
Yeah.
In Xbox 360. So with this, it's fully next gen in mind. Because I know our buddy Dave will be playing it on PC. I'd love to see what it looks like on PC.
And Chris Conway as well.
And Chris Conway, yeah. I'd love to see what it looks like on PC.
I think Max said he's going to buy it on PC as well.
Yeah.
I think at some point.
I might. See how I go.
Yeah.
Only because, like, I'm about to build a sweet PC.
If I had
PC.
The setup already, I'd wait, but I don't, and I'm not going to.
I'm going
to
play it right now.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, because like, we're about to build a sweet new PC. Video probably on Wednesday. I'm going to need cool shit to play on it, right?
So I'm not... To wrap it up, I'm not going to give it a score because I think it's kind of redundant for this kind of a game.
Yeah.
But if you enjoyed Destiny 1 at all, you will fucking love this game. It is everything that Destiny 1 wanted to be and then some.
Mm.
Very, very good. I highly, highly recommend. Even if you just want to play the story took me, I'm going to say, without rushing, because I was doing other shit. You know, I was taking my time and, you know, having fun with it. Maybe 12 hours. So even a full price game for a 12-hour story... That's pretty much how the industry is these days anyway. And if you do find you really like it, you can continue playing at max level. The raids are out the first raid is out next week, so there's going to be plenty to jump back into. Highly recommend.
Man, we went way longer than that, so we'll skip by the questions and we'll jump into the drop.
Oh, shit.
As your computer turns back on again.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're really digging it, man. Like, see, the benefit of what you... With how you play, it's like you play tall. Like, you play a handful of games and you play them fucking a lot.
Yeah,
where I play a lot of games very small.
Yeah. You like that you... We're at a buffet, and I'm just standing at the meat platter, but you're having entrees the whole night.
Yes.
I'll try something.
I'm like, oh, I'll try that. I'm like, oh, I'll try that. And you're like, I'm going to fucking town on the moose.
There's
all moose over here.
The reason I didn't get much, while my computer's laying up, I didn't get much in Destiny 1 is because I had no one to play it with.
Yeah, and then by the time I picked it up, you're like, oh, lost interest.
Yeah. It was, yeah. Mm. But, you know, I feel like I'll be playing this for a while. I was playing it with Max yesterday. I think Joel said he's thinking about picking it up. Max has a ton of friends that are already max level. So if you, you know, when you do get on, like when you unlock strikes at level 12,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we can come do strikes with you because it drops level appropriate gear. So I'll be still getting level 20 stuff. That's no big deal to me. Really quick to catch you up, if you know what I mean.
That's nice. Good to know.
So we move into the drop for the week of September 12th, 2017. I'm just going to speed run through them all as I usually do, and then we'll talk about the ones that we think might be worth picking up. Number one, what? I'm not numbering them, fuck that. Barja, Edge of Control HD, PS4, digital, and retail. Blackguards 2 is crossed out, so I guess that's not coming out anymore. Bloody Zombies, PS4 and PSVR, ooh. Digital. Butter and Friends, Babysitter what? Sim, PS4, digital.
Awesome.
Dishonored, Death of the Outsider,
oh, yeah.
PS4, digital, and retail. Dream Break, PS4, digital. Get Over Here. I'm sorry. Get Over Here! PS4, digital. Happy Dungeons, PS4, digital. Inside and Limbo Double Pack, PS4, retail. Maze, PS4, digital.
That's Maze as in M-A-I-Z-E, corn. Like corn. Corn. Yep.
Yeah. That thumbnail is actually really fucking interesting. Manifest 99, PSVR, digital. NASCAR Heat 2, PS4, digital and retail. NBA Live 18, PS4, digital and retail. NHL 18, PS4, digital and retail. Planet of the Eyes, PS4, digital. Pro Evolution Soccer 2018, PS4, PS3, digital. Samurai Showdown V Special, PS4, PS Vita, digital. Time Recoil, PS4, digital. Fuck, there's a lot coming out. Tooth and Tail, PS4, digital. Transcripted, PS4, digital. Trulon the Shadow Engine, PS4, digital. VR Carts, PSVR, digital. YS8 Lacrimosa of Dana, PS4, PS Vita, digital and retail. That's all of them. So let's go back to the top and quickly scroll down.
Obviously, a big one coming out this week is the Dishonored.
Yeah.
Not particularly interesting to me.
Yeah.
But if you want to read that out.
From the award-winning developers at Arkane Studios comes Dishonored Death of the Outsider, the first standalone adventure in the critically acclaimed Dishonored series. Be a badass supernatural assassin and take on the role of notorious Billy Lurk as she reunites with her mentor, Dord, in the original to pull off the greatest assassination ever conceived. I want to talk about Butter and Friends Babysitter Sim. Bread and Butter make their gaming debut. Grabbed from their popular themes, you and three friends can now grab them yourselves as you guard them and their friends from all sorts of abductors. That's really vague.
It doesn't really say shit. Hey, speaking of, not vague, but just weird shit. Mm. So with the PS Plus this month, we get How to Fool Boyfriend, which is that dating sim with birds.
With pigeons.
Yeah, you want to do some bird fucking?
That's what I do on the weekends.
But this one, so with the release of the Inside Limbo double pack, fuck yeah. Limbo is fantastic. Inside is exceptional.
Yep. It'd be like, what, $30?
I'd say $40.
$40. Definitely. Maze. Now, this thumbnail.
I got a weird PR email about this, and it caught my interest.
Two sticks of corn.
One
of them with the boombox. There's a teddy in the background with some sort of contraption on his back, and another one looking like. Yeah, he's just like dropping it all. Maze is what happens when two scientists misinterpret a memo from the US government and end up creating sentient corn. And we did mention the angry, condescending Russian robotic teddy bear on the unhinged albino corn stalk with an underbite. It's a lot to take in.
I'm going to have to email that.
Have to look,
I'm going to email them.
This sounds fucking rad. I don't know. It sounds funny. NHL 18.
Yeah.
I've said before, I don't like sports games, but when I do play one, hockey is probably my favorite. I know nothing about it, but and I'm not going to buy it.
No.
But if I happen to get it, I'm not going to complain either. I just like beating the fuck out of people.
But that pretty much wraps up the drop too.
That's it. That's a drop.
Yeah. So when we finish up a show, what do you do, Josh?
I do my spiel, which I'm never prepared for.
No.
How do I start it?
If you enjoyed that conversation.
If you enjoyed that PlayStation conversation, you can join in another one every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on YouTube, iTunes, and other podcast services. More conversation happens on our Facebook community page as My Chair Squeaks at facebook.com/groups/thepopculturist. You can contribute to the conversation by submitting us questions, which we didn't read today, at www.thepopculturist.com/questions.
Or in the comments below.
The most conversation happens on our Discord channel. You can get a link for that in the description below or on the aforementioned Facebook group page. And if you really happen to like what we do, please do consider heading over to patreon.com/thepopculturist. Check out the tiers there. There might be something there that interests you.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Josh Saunders.
And that was For The Players.